Down to business on News Talk.
Sponsored by Flowgas. On the grid, off the grid. Flowgas is Ireland's only supplier of LPG and natural gas. Wherever you are.
Now, Moore McDool is an esteemed economist lecturer who's been keeping a low profile over the last while, but has joined me this week to take a look at where we're at with some of the big issues that we're sure to hear much more about in the year ahead. Moore, you were the first person that I interviewed when I started here in News Talk back in 2008, and I remember saying you were just an absolute gentleman, and it's great to have you back again. And just to say that, I only remember that this morning, and I think I was actually shaking like a leaf as I interviewed you back in October 2008. It was.
Is News Talk that much of a?
I know. I was obviously worried about my job in those days. Yeah. Now, listen, you're very welcome, and it's good to talk to you. There's a few big hitter items that I want to chat to you about. The first one is housing, Moore. It's sort of a blight on society at the moment in terms of when we look at the homeless crisis and the people rough sleeping in our cities at night. We see young couples unable to afford properties. And we see this crazy system where rental properties are going through the roof and people seem to be unable to buy. As an economist, I just like... And I think we're probably guilty as a nation of oversimplifying this what is a complex problem. But I'd like to hear your views on it.
Okay, well, first of all, I think you should strip out the people who are sleeping rough, because while some of those are a consequence of difficulty in finding rentable or housing that they own, the reality is that there frequently are much deeper problems for the people whom you see sleeping out. And the truth is that even then, going back 10 years ago when you started your interviewing, and we were still, as we thought, in the Celtic Tiger, there were people sleeping out then.
Yeah.
Not many, but there were. So the other issue is... Well, in a sense, it's very simple. It's supply and demand. The real questions are, why is it? Why is it a big supply and demand issue? And this has really become a problem in the last 3 years, 3 to 4 years, because up to then, house prices were falling.
Yeah.
Nobody talked about a housing crisis as long as house prices were falling.
Yeah.
So what's happened in the last 3 or 4 years? And the answer is, very simple. The economy has bounced back. The population is rising. The number of people who are employed is rising. The number of people who are coming into the country looking for work, sorry, not looking for work, coming in to take jobs, that they're being headhunted in, is increasing. And that means that there's an increased demand for housing. The problem is that in the slump which followed the Celtic Tiger, it wasn't just that governments spent less money on social housing. It's that the house construction sector was gutted.
Yeah.
Workers left the country, firms went bust, banks were in trouble because they'd overlent, and therefore it was difficult to get credit for people to build, not just to buy, but to build, and you got a collapse in the amount of housing being produced. Now, you can't turn that round suddenly. Mm-hmm. I've just taken the Lewis in from way out in Carrick Mines to talk to you. And I was just looking as we passed, past Clay Farm, past all these areas, there is huge building activity taking place, but it's taking time to come on stream.
Yeah.
And the other difficulty is that it's taking place in Dublin, because everybody, they may not like to hear this outside the M50, but the truth is people want to live in Dublin.
Where
they
the jobs are.
They want to
work
in Dublin.
Yeah.
I'm talking about Dublin in a broad sense. I don't actually mean the M50. I mean in the greater Dublin conurbation. And if people are migrating into the country, and if the population of the country is growing, and if people are migrating within the country from rural areas, stop, you get all these comments on the problems of rural Ireland at the moment because young people are leaving to go to the towns and cities. All that is happening. So the houses are needed. It's not just more houses. It's more houses in particular places, more apartments in particular places.
And I think you're right. You alluded to it earlier. We built houses in the wrong places.
Oh, absolutely. Like the so-called ghost estates.
And, estates in small towns outside of Leitrim and whatnot, that no one was ever going to buy.
It's nothing against Leitrim, but it's just... who in God's name, who in God's name allowed somebody to borrow money from a bank to build 500 houses or whatever it was outside a small village in Leitrim? Mm. I mean, who was likely, even in Celtic Tiger times, want to go there?
It seems insane when you think about it. Do you see, and again, you've been quite eloquent on how you've described the problem. Do you see a solution?
Not in the sense that there is something that this government can do which would solve the problem like that. It can't happen. Do you want to turn off the tap and stop the economy growing and encourage people to emigrate?
No.
That'll get rid of your housing problem for you. But assuming that we want a growing economy, we want higher incomes, we want all the facilities to go with that, then there's nothing that any government, not just this government, any government can do in the short run other than to make it possible for people to, the private housing sector, to produce more houses. It may be necessary to fund the building of housing by local authorities. You're getting into another issue entirely, mm-hmm. whether social housing should or should not be provided by ordinary builders. But you're also running into difficulties there. If you're going to ask the government to start funding more building, two problems. One, are there people there to do the building? Okay. And the second one is, where do they get the money?
Mm.
Now, I've heard people say, well, it's very cheap to borrow today, which is true. You can borrow for 10 years at less than 1%, or the government can. And that sounds wonderful. But nobody thinks that interest rates are going to remain at 10% forever. Oh, sorry, I should say at 1% or less forever.
You gave me a fright there when you mentioned 10.
Oh, it's the dots and the zeros.
I remember those days as well.
As I get older, I just misplace them. The government, saying that the government can borrow money cheaply now means that they can borrow and they can worry about the interest cost of that borrowing later on. Now, governments are well known for taking a really long view, like the next election. But it doesn't mean that if you're trying to devise policy, that you should take that view.
Let me talk to you about a parallel problem, which is health. We have a situation now where the health system doesn't seem to be fit for purpose. We've got patients lying on trolleys in many hospitals for 48 hours. And it appears from the outside looking in that we have a broken system. Do you agree with that?
Gosh, yes, and of course no at the same time. Yes, I think there's a huge problem with the organisation of the Irish public health system. And this has nothing to do with the two-tier nature. Let's just look at that publicly provided healthcare. How many years ago now was it that we had 11 or 12 regional health authorities. And at a stroke of a pen, they said, well, what we're going to deal with this is we need one big authority to do the job. Now, so what did they do? They brought them all together and called them the HSE.
And we ended up with two. We ended up with what we had before and the HSE. Pretty much.
Yeah, but if you were going to do the job better, if you think about this, it has to be the case that you felt that having all these people working in 11 or 12 different health authorities meant that there was overmanning or overpersoning of the health service in terms of administration. So what did they do? It was rather like the Irish water fiasco. They said, we'll bring it all together into one, but there'll be no job losses.
Yeah.
Now, I can understand the politics of that. If you go to a place like Kilkenny, which is where the South Eastern Health Board was, the South Eastern Health Board was a big block of people living in Kilkenny and for housing and for shopping and all that. So if you close that down, that's going to be a big problem. And that will be a problem all over the country in the various health board areas. So this political thing of we can get them all together, but you can't change the employment. So now you've got this monstrous HSE, which is clearly, you use the term dysfunctional, and it's not delivering properly. On the other hand, there are also, that's the organisation, but there are big question marks over what the HSE actually did. A doctor whom I know very well reminded me, only in the last 24 hours, that the HSE made a decision, again about 10 years ago, that really we had too many hospital beds. Really, we needed to have more preventive care out there. Now, that happened to suit the government of the day because you could close down hospital beds, which would mean you would save money in terms of the taxpayers, but you were being promised by the HSE a much more effective system with fewer hospital beds, more GPs, more preventive care and so on. So they did it. It doesn't, in retrospect, seem to have been smart. Because, yeah, of course, what happened in the meantime was economic growth started again, more people coming in. And then, fellas my age, there are more of them round. So the success of health policy in the past in keeping me alive means that I'm going to get older. And as I get older, on average, I get sicker. And as I get sicker, there's more demand on the health service. So in addition to the greater number of people in the country, there's a greater number of older people, and older people are the main customers for healthcare.
Yeah.
And that's going on underneath everything. And then you have your flu problems. But the flu problems are very difficult to deal with. Yes, there are people on trolleys. And yes, it's because there isn't inadequate capacity. And yes, we should have more capacity, which takes time. But you have to remember that you can't put in full-scale capacity, economically speaking, to deal with peak load.
Yeah.
I mean, I hear them criticizing hospital management for saying they're postponing operations. What else would they do? They know there are people going to come in around Christmas. They may not have much capacity for them. Of course, the obvious thing to do is to postpone elective surgery. The truth of it is the media are playing this up as a crisis which represents a failure of this government or the previous government. It's not. It's to do with the fact that there is an undersupply. And it may well be to do with what I said a few minutes ago, that decisions were taken about whether we should be concentrating on care in hospitals as opposed to care outside hospitals. And that may not have been right.
Yeah. I know. One thing I do agree with you on is I agree that it's not any government's, like, we've had the same thing for 12, 15 years, and it peaks at the same time year.
And yet, if you knew this was going to happen, why didn't you do something to stop it? It happened last year, and here we are again.
And the health budget increases every year.
Exactly. Yeah. The health budget increases.
But the problem doesn't get solved.
The problem doesn't get solved because the capacity hasn't increased. And in fairness to the hospital management, they know it's going to happen. And the only thing they can do is make sure they've plenty of trolleys available.
Okay, I have one more thing I want to ask you about. And I had loads of things, but I'm going to keep it to the rule of three today. I want to ask you about Brexit more, because I haven't heard from you on this. And I'd like to get just your take on it, because you've been quiet now for the last 12 months, and you've no doubt thought and read and written and done loads of stuff about Brexit. So let me hear your thoughts about where we are now and what's likely to happen and where it's going to affect us, the Irish.
Okay, where we are now, we're sitting, despite everything the government has done to get the British to commit themselves to the non-existence or the total transparency or whatever you want to call it of any future border. That was an achievement. But the truth of the matter is now we're sitting on the sidelines, sitting beside a road, watching a slow motion crash. I can't think of a decision made in a democratic country over the last 100 years which is so bad, so self-harming, and so idiotically based in terms of why people voted the way they voted than what happened in England. And I stress England. Mm. It's the English who are the problem here, not even the British, the Ukish.
Right.
It's the Scots are fine, the Northern Irish are fine. Sorry, I suppose we have to count the Welsh as English in this respect. But it's in the Kingdom of England.
Yeah, no,
that
I think you're
the
right.
The problem is.
Yeah.
And it was outside
London
and
as well.
And the curious thing is when you look at the statistics, you know the areas, they say they want to control immigration. There's a big problem. All these immigrants coming in. The area where the no vote was highest are the areas where the level of immigration was lowest.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're talking about a lumpen proletariat who are disgusted with where they find themselves. This is in the north of England because mining is gone, shipbuilding is on its way out, steel industry is disappearing. And old divils of my age in England who are harking back to when the country was a safe place, and you know, and we had our place in the world, and the empire was behind us and or under us. And, you know, they're just angry old men, angry old women. And then the it's like the Rust Belt problem in the United States. And they all said, yeah, this is the solution. We're getting control of ourselves again. I mean, it was nonsensical. Now, what's it mean for us? There is no good upside of this. The only question is how damaging. Unless you're going to pray to St. Teresa or somebody to get the British to change, the English to change their minds.
Well, just that point about the like they've done this, and I think a lot of them probably quietly regret it because they see now where this is heading. Like, you know, and we have to be careful about sort of triumphalism, as people say, because
told you so.
Because there's a lot of people there who would, I'd say if they could set the clock back, might choose to do so. But if they've said that we're going to run with this now, like it's hard to see how you can actually leave a customs union and end up with anything but a hard border, is it not?
Have you seen any square circles recently?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying.
It can't happen.
I can't imagine.
They want free trade. They want a free trade deal for goods and services with the remainder, with the EU. That's fine. And we can organise that. But the difficulty about that is, that means that any goods which have got into Britain can now go to the continent free of tax, free of the common external tariff. So, okay, you want a face-saving solution? Britain's going to leave the customs union. We're going to have a Union Jack customs union. But this Union Jack customs union will have a customs union with another EU, and you know these foreigners across the channel. So we'll have customs union. Something like that. But if you want to call that leaving the customs union, I'm on your side.
So what you're saying is that we're going to end up with what we have just called something different.
If they are serious about free trade,
right,
it has to be something like that. And I mean, we better understand something. The border is an important issue here. It isn't a tuppenny dam issue, political issue in England.
Yeah.
And there may be a problem with Scotland, but there is no problem for them in the border. They don't care. I mean, I had a good friend, he's dead 2 years now. A lot of your listeners will have heard him, Ronan Fanning, the historian. Yeah. Ronan wrote a book called The Fatal Path, and it was about Ireland between 1912 and 1922, but Ireland in the context of high politics in Britain and again in England.
Yeah.
And when you read that, anybody who's listening to this should say, rush down to your bookstore and buy that book. It's so readable, and you begin to realise how much of what happened 1916 and up to the Civil War, the whole damn thing, was a consequence of internal squabbles within the Tory party and between the Tories and the Liberals in Westminster.
Yeah.
And they had a small matter of a little problem on the continent called the war to deal with as well, of course. But really, they took their eye off the ball entirely in relation to Ireland, and they didn't care.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think I think you're so right, and I think, you know, I think we were probably smart, or at least Europe was probably smart in making the Irish border issue, pushing it front and centre, and we've done okay out of it, I'd suggest, thus far. Mm. We don't know what's going to happen yet, but thus far I think we've done better than we expected to do.
But if we've made them concentrate, they've suddenly realised that there is a serious problem. Everything else, we can always, you know, come on, it's in our interest to do a deal, isn't it, chaps? But this is, they've got to realise that actually there are some issues, the Irish border being one, but the customs union one that you brought up being the other, in effect, they're non-negotiable because it's not possible to have what they're looking for.
Yeah,
they're asking for squared circles.
Well, listen, I could talk to you all day. I want to thank you for coming in.
It's been a pleasure.
I really love the way you are so candid and you're so sort of blunt and eloquent at the same time. And to get your view on things is just refreshing. So, Moore McDool, a pleasure as always. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me on.
Down to business on Newstalk.
Sponsored by Flowgas. On the grid, off the grid. Flowgas is Ireland's only supplier of LPG and natural gas. Wherever you are.